German Chancellor warning about our country's exponential growth of COVID-19 infections, urging citizens to get vaccinated. British supermarkets and suppliers warning of possible food shortages due to staff self-isolation. This has rising coronavirus cases threaten chaos. And Iranian President Rouhani announces the opening of the country's first oil export terminal outside the strategic Strait of Hormuz in the Gulf of Oman. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zanjefik. Good to have you with us. Starting with Germany, Chancellor Merkel expressing concerns about a rapid spread of novel coronavirus cases in her country.
The number of infections has been rising again in recent days with a clear and worrying dynamic. This is mainly caused by the Delta variant of the coronavirus. The reproduction factor of the virus is consistently above 1, which means that we are seeing exponential growth.
Angela Merkel says Germany's cases are expected to double within the next 2 weeks, noting that new restrictions may be necessary if infections continue to soar. She urged Germans to get vaccinated, saying that each jab is a small step toward a return to normality. Nearly half of all people in the country have been fully vaccinated. Germany's daily infection rates have been relatively low over the past few months, but the number of cases has risen due to more contagious strains of the virus. In total, Germany has logged 3.75 million infections and more than 91,000 deaths. The British supermarkets and suppliers have warned of a possible food shortage sparked by self-isolating staff amid rising coronavirus cases. British news outlets have released photos of empty supermarket shelves as retailers' operations are affected by missing staff at stores and in supply chains. This as an official application is warning contacts of COVID patients to self-isolate for 10 days. The alerts have also forced thousands of workers in other industries and school kids to stay at home. Dubbed as the Pingdemic, the app has forced an additional 600,000 people to self-isolate in recent days, raising the total figure to 1 million. On Monday, the UK eased all virus curbs in England, while new cases are surging toward levels not seen since January. Now, to get a better picture, let's go to London and have our own site. Puras are there, is their site. Hopefully, you're safe from all of this. So tell us how seriously this has been, the self-isolating of these staffers at food stores and supermarkets.
Thanks, Veros. This is really a continuation of the mess left behind by the UK decision to leave the European Union that led to certain shortages of staffers since that happened. But it was only exacerbated with the advent of the pandemic. So the vacancies that were left behind because of Brexit really were something predictable. Now we are looking at more and more people not being available for work for the following reason. Number one, a lot of the non-UK workers, immigrant workers who used to make themselves available for seasonal work or working on poultries, meat processing factories and elsewhere are no longer there. And then, as you said in your story, came the pingdemic. The NHS app, the National Health Service app, what it does is it pings you, it informs you that you have been in contact with someone who has tested positive for coronavirus, and so you'll have to go home and isolate for 10 days. The impact that has is on the supply chain, from where, for example, poultry is produced to where it is shelved, it is put on supermarket shelves for people to access. Now, if people are not available to do the job at poultry farms, then there will be a shortage or a reduction, if you will, in production. And then you will need truck drivers, for instance, to carry those food products from the farm to all the way to the supermarkets where the consumers can access them. Remember what happened, for example, at the beginning of the pandemic. There was a scare that there was going to be a shortage of foodstuff, not of people, but of foodstuff. People storm supermarkets to stock up on their needs for fear of things not being available. And that might be something that we might see in the coming days if the trend continues. Industry business owners in across the different industries that are being impacted by this are telling the government, you have to do something. You have to come up with a list exempting certain people working in certain sectors from self-isolating when they are pinged, to get rid of this problem, this gap that has been created because of the so-called pandemic virus. So the government, of course, has said that they're working on a list. People are really confused as to what that list is going to look like or when they're going to give the list out so they know how to proceed henceforth, Beres.
Okay. And with what is being said about the way that Boris Johnson is handling this, let's see what's going to come out of it. Thank you very much for that site, Poor Designer, London Beer. Now, the UK has asked the European Union to look at its proposal on Northern Ireland seriously amid disagreements over post-Brexit trading arrangements for the region. Prime Minister Boris Johnson made the call during a phone conversation with the President of the European Commission. Johnson told Ursula von der Leyen that a current operation of the so-called Northern Ireland Protocol is unsustainable. It requires the proposed changes. And this after the European Commission ruled out renegotiating post-Brexit trading arrangements for Northern Ireland. It has stressed the bloc's readiness to seek creative solutions within the framework of the agreed protocol, but will not agree to a renegotiation. Now we have more about Europe. French President Emmanuel Macron calling for an unscheduled national security meeting to discuss the use of Israeli-made Pegasus spyware in his country. The government spokesman says that Macron has taken the issue very seriously and is dedicating the meeting to the question of cybersecurity. Now, the meeting is held amid recent reports showing the usage of Pegasus software for spying on international figures, including activists, journalists, and politicians. Macron himself has been enlisted as a potential target of the spyware created by Israeli firm NSO. It's been strongly criticized for the software's misuse for espionage activities in many countries, including the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Bahrain. Now moving on, Iran announces the opening of its first oil export terminal outside the strategic Strait of Hormuz in the Gulf of Oman.
We start the operation of the 1,000-kilometer-long pipeline transferring crude oil from Ghura in the southwest to Jusk, and the operation of the Mekran region export terminal. This opening is a very strong response to Plutters and the United States and to all those who think of the Islamic Republic as enjoying no sustainable future.
During a cabinet meeting, Hassan Rouhani said that the pipeline was completed in a matter of 2 years, and it marks the Islamic Republic's most strategic project. The president noted that Iran's oil will be exported through the Gulf of Oman, and that's what makes this project significant. Oil Minister Bijan Zengin also said that the terminal is a depiction of reliance on the country's domestic capabilities. A Palestinian prisoner has died in an Israeli jail, with media reports suggesting the man succumbed to torture inside the prison. Abdul Yusuf Al-Khatib Al-Tamimi was found dead in a cell in the city of Al-Quds. Israeli prison staff reportedly severely beat him and used electric shock, but Israeli authorities saying that Al-Tamimi died of heart attack. A claim that the victim's family has rejected, saying that he has had no pre-existing medical condition. Al-Tamimi was arrested for driving offenses and leaves behind a wife and four kids. He's the latest victim among thousands of Palestinians languishing in Israeli prisons, many of them without any charge. Palestinian prisoners are kept under deplorable conditions without proper hygienic standard. Many of them are subjected to systemic torture, harassment, and repression. Now, political analyst Saad Nimr says that the international community must take action against Tel Aviv to make the regime stop violence against Palestinian prisoners.
The Israeli conduct generally against the Palestinian prisoners, in general, it's always to dehumanize the Palestinians. They never consider the Palestinian life matters at all. Now, concerning the Tamimi issue, apparently the brutality of the Israeli police, as the family had said, and based on witnesses who were there, They witnessed that he was beaten and he was assaulted against the law, and that what led to his death. What we need by the international community, not only a condemnation and statements of condemnation, but rather to start to take actions against the violation of the international law and the human rights laws. In this respect, we believe that international community should start putting pressure on Israel by economic means or by cutting or by really punishing the Israelis till they correct their records or till they stop these kind of atrocities against the Palestinians.
Thousands of Indian police are deployed across the capital, New Delhi, ahead of a fresh protest by farmers against the government's agricultural reforms. Police forces have set up barricades and roadblocks near the parliament where protesters plan to hold a sit-in. Authorities allowed only 200 farmers to gather for the new protests after an earlier rally turned violent. The farmers have been camping on the outskirts of Delhi since last November, demanding the government to scrap the farm laws. They say that the legislation will threaten their livelihoods and only benefit large corporations. The government, however, argues that reforms aim to make the agricultural sector more efficient. The two sides have held several rounds of talks without making any progress. The UK has decided to send two aircraft carriers to the South China Sea, and this on the heels of the US deployment of 25 F-22 Raptor fighter jets to that region. The United States and its allies are accelerating tensions with China. They say that this sends a message to Beijing. Is this a message that war is around the corner? China, meanwhile, is not a standing idle by. Its military capabilities may prove insurmountable.
Britain has announced the permanent deployment of two warships in the South China Sea amid growing tensions between the U.S. and China. Britain's Defense Secretary Ben Wallace said the U.K. will permanently assign two ships in the region by the end of this year. He made the announcement in a joint press conference with his Japanese counterpart in Tokyo on Tuesday.
Following on from the strike group's inaugural deployment, the United Kingdom will permanently assign two ships in the region from later this year, as well as contributing a littoral response group in the coming years to come.
Japan is a close ally of the U.S., and it hosts the biggest concentration of U.S. military forces outside of the U.S., including ships, aircraft, and troops. The deployment would be after a strike group consisting of UK's Queen Elizabeth aircraft carrier and escort ships sailed through the waters in the South China Sea in September. The Queen Elizabeth is being escorted by two destroyers, two frigates, two support vessels, and ships from the U.S. and the Netherlands. It will come to Japan through the South China Sea, parts of which are claimed by China and Southeast Asian countries, with stops in India, Singapore, and South Korea. In a statement on the deployment, Pentagon spokesperson congratulated Britain for its, quote, commitment to an interconnected network of allies and partners who mutually cooperate and support freedom of navigation and a rules-based order in the Indo-Pacific region.
These are actually illusionary entities. Yes, they have sets of laws and they are separate countries, but the globalists who run the United States and the United Kingdom work together as one entity. So what we have is two countries in which the citizens are taught from young age that they live in a sovereign state. But in fact, the two countries of the UK and the US are both under the basic control of a globalist elite.
The South China Sea is a gateway to major sea routes through which about $3.4 trillion worth of trade passes each year. China claims sovereignty over much of the strategic waterway and has, since 2014, built artificial islands on reefs and installed military bases on them.
Now, what we know about the UK's move is that the country has permanently deployed two warships in the Asia-Pacific region. And this is why London is deepening its security ties with Japan. The UK is saying it's worried about China's territorial ambitions in the region, including Taiwan. But what does this have to do with the UK? Is it blindly following the US's lead?
UK's Defense Secretary has said that London would also eventually deploy a littoral response group to the Pacific. That's a unit of Marines trained to undertake missions including evacuations and anti-terrorism operations.
the UK and the United States function as one entity, especially when they have a common target, which in this time is China and, in a secondary level, Iran.
UK's latest policy announcements are in line with US's anti-China drive. The Biden administration's approach toward China is taking shape. Many believe Biden will continue the policies of his predecessor to contain China. While the U.S. has seemingly reduced its involvement in West Asia, the American military has sought to refocus its attention on preparing for a conflict with its major rivals, China and Russia, which it considers to be major competition in the insatiable U.S. quest for power and influence. However, Washington's economy and military power is on the wane, and whether Washington likes it or not, it has to change its warmongering policies and adopt a rather more cooperative one, something that is not likely to happen anytime soon.
The United States runs what it is typically called a protection racket. You must pay to buy United States weapons and defense systems in order not to be threatened by the boogeymen that they create out of other independent countries. So the United States is always leaning on its so-called allies because, in effect, with the exception of England, with the exception of the UK, all of the other countries are military protectorates or socio-economic and military colonies of the United States.
How the Biden administration actually deals with thorny issues between the two countries is yet to be seen. It will depend on how China responds to U.S. actions. Given the strong negative public sentiments towards each other and their increasingly divergent domestic political practices, the truly benign strategic competition still remains difficult, if not impossible, to achieve.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish. Health tourism. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the third episode of our series, Health Tourism. In this episode, we are going to introduce to you Farabi Hospital in Tehran, a leading hospital in the field of eye surgery and ophthalmology in Iran. Please stay with us. Ophthalmology has been studied and developed in Iran for well over 1,000 years. Traces of this branch of medicine can be found in the writings of some well-known Iranian scientists. For example, the world-renowned Iranian physician Mohammad ibn Zakaria Razi, who lived from 854 to 925 AD, mentions various forms of eye disease in the second chapter of his famous book, Al-Hawi. The book is a medical encyclopedia which served as a reference text for centuries after it was written. Mohammad ibn Zakaria Razi was the first physician doctor to systematically study and write about eye disease. He was also the first physician to study the reaction of the human eye and the pupil of the eye to light. He was also the first to recognize that eye penis is the trachoma disease. It's worth mentioning that Razi's authoritative medical encyclopedia, Al-Hawi, had a major influence on development of medicine and medical practice in Europe for centuries. The book became part of the medical curriculum taught at European universities for centuries. As ophthalmology, in parallel to other sciences, had advanced and developed in recent decades, with doctors and specialists making remarkable advances, Iran has also contributed significantly to this important area of medicine. The Islamic Republic of Iran has successfully trained highly qualified and experienced ophthalmologists and eye specialists who are leading researchers and physicians in this field. Benefiting from experienced doctors and modern medical facilities as well as modern infrastructure, Iran has turned into a pioneering state in the field of ophthalmology, and the role played by Farabi Hospital is certainly significant. The hospital is considered one of the leading centers of ophthalmology in Iran and the West Asia region. Farabi Hospital, established in 1921, is one of the oldest hospitals in Iran. Almost 2 decades after its establishment, Iran's first chair of ophthalmology was founded at this hospital in a building with an area of 13,000 square meters in 1946, where 3-year specialist ophthalmology courses were held. Those students who successfully completed the training courses at the university were able to take part in these specialist courses and become a qualified ophthalmologist after passing the relevant exams and writing a thesis. One of the iconic figures in ophthalmology in Iran is the late Professor Mohammad Oli Shams, who played a key role in eradicating trachoma in this country. In 1957, the first eye surgery operating room was opened in Farabi Hospital and was named in honor of Professor Shams, who also performed the first corneal graft operation in 1934 in Farabi Hospital. Professor Mohammad Qoli Shams is known as the father of ophthalmology in Iran. Farabi's ophthalmology department at first included various sections such as ear, nose, throat, ENT, a lab and pharmacy with 120 inpatient beds, which later expanded to 220 beds. After the Islamic Revolution in Iran, the Farabi Hospital was renovated and expanded considerably, offering a lot more specialist services to patients. The expansion of the hospital included the construction of a new building with an area of 23,000 square meters, which was added to the old structure in 1987. The Eye Hospital is now one of the biggest and most well-equipped medical centers of its kind in the West Asia region, offering myriad specialist services for treatment of eye disease to patients who previously used to go abroad to seek treatment. Farabi is a state-run hospital that offers a wide range of medical services at a very reasonable cost. Therefore, the hospital has been able to successfully attract many patients from abroad, especially from countries neighboring Iran as well as from Europe. The cost of treatment at Farabi Hospital compares favorably and is significantly lower than the cost of treatment in European hospitals and hospitals within the Arab world. It's worth mentioning that Farabi Hospital is currently equipped with the most modern and state-of-the-art medical facilities, employing the world's most advanced medical equipment, turning the hospital into one of the best medical centers of its kind in the region. The Farabi Hospital currently has 227 active beds, 57 scientific boards, 80 assistants, and 16 special fellowships. LASIK, commonly referred to as laser eye surgery or laser vision correction, is a type of refractive surgery for the correction of myopia, hyperopia, and astigmatism. Farabi Hospital has a laser eye surgery section, which is equipped with advanced facilities, two operating rooms, and two refractive surgery clinics, keratoconus and cornea keratoplasty, as well as imaging and refraction rooms. Also, one of the most important sections of this hospital is the stem cell processing unit that is in charge of cell therapy, extracting and cloning cells and stem cells. Since its establishment, the Farabi Hospital has always drawn the attention of doctors and ophthalmologists from Iran's neighboring countries, especially Arab countries bordering Iran. Patients from these countries not only receive expert consultation from the hospital's doctors, but also introduce and send the patient to the hospital for receiving diagnostic services to this center, resulting in establishing International Patient Department, IPD, in the hospital for offering suitable services to foreign patients. The IPD department at Farabi Hospital was founded in 2017 with the aim of admitting and facilitating foreign patients' stay in Iran. This IPD department employs the best specialist doctors in the field of ophthalmology. There is also a VIP section for those patients who ask for it. The IPD department of Farabi Hospital is also equipped with 7 rooms for monitoring patients, offering a variety of services for the comfort of patients, such as Wi-Fi, TV, and private WC and bath for each room. The medical staff and nurses are fluent in Arabic and English. Dear listeners, for further information, you can go to the official website of Farabi Hospital, that is http://farabi.tums.ac.ir, or contact the international department of the hospital, that is farabi.vip@tums.ac.ir. Dear listeners, this has been the third episode of our series, Health Tourism. Until our next program, goodbye and God bless.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The days leading to Ghadir are related to Wilaya. And Wilaya is a very important topic that we need to have a correct understanding of. And if we don't have a correct understanding of the concept of wilaya, then being a Shia, being a follower of the Ahlul Bayt, seems to be a little deficient, at least, in the intention of the person, in terms of practically following everything. That's a important thing to try to move towards and try to develop within us. But what's most important first is to identify what we need to do, get in our minds the direction straight and clear, and then inshallah try to implement. What is the concept of wilaya? I'll start by saying there's a common understanding amongst the Shia in regards to the sayings of the Prophet on the day of Ghadir that has the word wilaya in the form, of course, in a different form. Wilaya isn't mentioned. Mawla comes from wilaya. The root of mawla is wilaya. There's a certain understanding that the Shia has about what wilaya isn't. Some have said that what the Prophet meant when he said, "In Ghadir, man kuntu mawla, fa'aliyun mawla." This muwalat, this wilaya, is wilaya of friendship. Being the friends, one of the meanings of wilaya is friendship. The Holy Prophet simply said this: if you like me, if you befriend me, you should befriend Ali as well. The Shia have a common understanding that that's not what is intended by wilaya here. Although that's definitely there, meaning Islam says, the Quran says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, قُلْ say, لَا أَسْأَلُكُمْ أَجْرًا إِلَّا الْمَوَدَّةَ فِي الْقُرْبَى. The only thing I ask as a reward for what you have received from me, which is only good for you, not for me. Somehow, it's called a reward for the message of the Prophet, the mission of the Prophet, the blessings of the Prophet being given. But the benefit of going by this teaching is actually for the person who goes by it. And that is al-mawaddata fil qurba, having love, which is beyond just simple friendship. You may have a friendship, you may like someone, you may befriend them, you may see them. There's different levels of that. But having mawadda, genuine, strong love that is expressed, that's what mawadda means. That's there, but that's not what the Prophet is saying in Ghadir. That's not what man kuntu mawla fa'aliyun or fa'hada aliyun mawla. That's not what is intended. This is very important for us to understand. When we talk about wilaya, we're not talking about the love of the Ahlul Bayt. The love of the Ahlul Bayt is important. When we discuss the love of the Ahlul Bayt, we need to go all out, discuss what it means, how to develop it, what the effects are, and so on and so forth. But that's the love of the Ahlul Bayt. That's not wilaya. The wilaya of the day of Ghadir is not that. Why are we saying this is important for us to understand? Because we tend to mistake that. We seem to, I would say, many of us, I wanted to go a little further in the numbers, but I'll limit it. Many of those who identify as Shia, it seems like what we understand of wilaya is really that love for the Ahlul Bayt. We say it isn't, but it seems like what we understand of wilaya is simply love of the Ahlul Bayt. Why? Because we will explain this, what the Holy Prophet meant by wilaya. If we understand what the Prophet says and what he means when he says Ali is the mawla after him, which is the first mawla, the concept of wilaya is not limited to Ali ibn Abi Talib. It's about wilaya after the demise of the Prophet, starting with Ali ibn Abi Talib. The concept of wilaya is more general than one individual. When we start understanding what the concept of wilayah is, what the Prophet meant by wilayah, and then look at what we understand of this topic, and we'll realize that I think a good number of us are at least confused about it, if not disbelieve in wilayah. What is wilayah? What is man kuntu mawla fa aliyun mawla? What is it that Amirul Mu'mineen on that day is given and is announced that after the demise of the Prophet, he's going to be what the Prophet was during life, what aspect of the life of the Prophet, what aspect of the character, the personality, the responsibilities of the Prophet is Ali ibn Abi Talib continuing onwards. If you pay attention to the hadith, it doesn't say wilayah starts with Ali ibn Abi Talib even to continue. It says, Man kuntu mawla fa aliyun mawla. I was your mawla. Now, after me, Ali is your mawla. Wilayah started with the Prophet. An aspect that the Prophet had, a responsibility that he had, is supposed to carry on and continue after his demise. That's why we call this, in a sense, khilafah and successorship. It's because somebody succeeds the Prophet in what? In being him? Absolutely not. In his nubuwah, prophethood? No. The hadith al-manzala that we're all familiar with, أَنْتَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزِلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَّ بَعْدِي. The relationship that you have with me is similar to the relationship of Harun with Musa, Aaron with Moses. Except that, أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَّ بَعْدِي. There's no prophet after me. So that aspect of the prophet is not continuing. Him as a person continuing? No. That's the Holy Prophet. This is another individual. What is it here? Is it teaching? Is it preaching? Although Ali ibn Abi Talib had that, أنا مدينة العلم وعلي بابها. Amir al-Mu'mineen had the knowledge of the Prophet. All of the knowledge of the Prophet, the graduate of the school of the Prophet with all of the knowledge of the Prophet is Ali ibn Abi Talib. And there is none other amongst the men. Fatima to Zahra is a whole different story. Salamullah alayha wa salawatu alayha. She's beyond that. I can't discuss that. We've at times mentioned a few words. But amongst the men, the one person who has all the knowledge of the Prophet is Ali ibn Abi Talib. That's why the Holy Prophet said, if you want to enter the city of my knowledge, not my city, the city of my knowledge, the gate is Ali ibn Abi Talib. He has it. You have to go through Ali ibn Abi Talib to get it. That's true, but is that what wilayah means? No, that's not what wilayah means. It's not the aspect of the character, personality, and responsibility of the Prophet that is being carried on in Amirul Mu'mineen. There's another term related to wilayah that tells us what wilayah means, and that is when the verse was revealed that you need to tell the people about wilayah, about Ali ibn Abi Talib, about after you. The Holy Prophet, based on God's command, told everybody there that they need to refer to Ali ibn Abi Talib with a particular term, particular title, and that is Amirul Mu'mineen. And this is what tells us, helps us understand what wilayah is. Wilayah of Ali ibn Abi Talib is Ali ibn Abi Talib is responsible for the ummah. The same way that the Prophet, he brought down the message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, delivered it to the people, that is definitely there. But that's not the only thing the Prophet did. The Prophet was responsible to guide the ummah in the right direction by being the authority, the ruler, the one who commands the believers. And they are supposed to follow his instructions. The military under his command, taxes under his command, governors under his command, law of the land under his command.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Ali.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
In the limelight.
Germany is asking itself how one of the world's richest countries managed to be taken by surprise by last week's extreme weather events as more details emerge of how early warnings about record rainfall and expected floods did not make their way to the communities most at risk. The article you're about to hear has been written by the Guardian journalist Philip Altman. The piece is titled German Flood Alert System Criticized for Monumental Failure. Germany is asking itself how one of the world's richest countries managed to be taken by surprise by last week's extreme weather events. As more details emerge of how early warnings about record rainfall and expected floods did not make their way to the communities most at risk. In Erfstadt, south of Cologne, where a flooded gravel quarry swallowed up cars, houses and parts of a historic castle, residents who had installed the federal government's weather warning app were advised on Wednesday, 14th of July, to stay inside their houses. By Thursday, 15th of July, they were informed that a nearby dam was at risk of breaking, putting them in extreme danger. Yet, in the Ahrweiler district in the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, where at least 117 people died after torrents of rainwater collected in the surrounding Eifel Mountains and then tore through several villages last Wednesday, the NINA warning app had not sent out a comparable warning, the German news agency Deutsche Presseagentur reported on Monday, 19th of July. Even though the European Flood Awareness System, IFAS, sent out specific warnings for the worst-hit German regions 4 days before the start of the downpour, the ensuing flash floods still appeared to have taken the majority of residents by surprise. Professor Hannah Cloke, a hydrologist at the University of Reading in England, who set up and advises IFAS, told the Politico website the death toll was a monumental failure of the system. The German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer dismissed suggestions that federal officials had made mistakes and said warnings were passed on to local authorities who make decisions on disaster protection. The German Interior Minister in the western state of North Rhine-Westphalia, Herbert Ruhl, where 47 people died, conceded that the early warning system had not worked as efficiently as it could have, but said he did not see any fundamental problems with the system. A spokesperson for Herbert Ruhl's ministry on Monday, 19th of July, said it had passed on warnings to the local municipalities concerned. Head of Germany's Federal Office of Civic Protection and Disaster Assistance appeared to shift the blame to local authorities. The warning infrastructure as such wasn't our problem, but the question of how sensitive the public authorities and the population are in their response, said the agency's president, Armin Schuster. Armin Schuster told broadcaster Deutschlandfunk that digital warnings such as low warning apps, text messages or emails did not always reach all those at risk. Instead, he called for an investment program to increase the number of flood warning sirens in areas that could see more floods in the coming years. The Disaster Assistance Agency has been facing scrutiny since last year's Nationwide Emergency Warning Day, the first test run of the country's warning infrastructure since reunification in 1991. Slated to run for 20 minutes, the event on 10th of September 2020 was meant to demonstrate the functionality of everything from sirens to push notifications on smartphones. Instead, the warning day demonstrated the current system's gaps, with many receiving push alerts with a delay or not at all after the nationwide push overloaded the system. Annalena Baerbock, the Green Party's candidate for chancellor at elections this September, told Der Spiegel magazine that the appropriate response to the catastrophic floods was a tripartite national effort of strength involving a more centralized disaster management system, readjusting the design of cities and rivers for the event of more extreme weather events, and increased efforts on climate protection. We need to reshape disaster management, Annalena Baerbock said, and the federal government needs to take more responsibility for it. As receding water levels laid bare the full extent of the damage in towns and villages in western Germany, residents feared they could be left without access to electricity and drinking water for months. In Ahrweiler district, about 30,000 are currently without electricity, drinking water, and gas after Wednesday's flash floods broke up sewage systems, tore through a major gas pipeline, and brought a purification plant to a standstill. It looks like the infrastructure is destroyed so badly that some places won't have drinking water for weeks or even months. The mayor of the town of Altena in Cornelia Wingard told the newspaper Bild. It is clear that our community will end up looking very different because those buildings that defined the area for more than 50 or 100 or 150 years will have to be torn down. Even water towers in parts of the area that were spared the worst of the floods had run dry and had to be refilled either through tank lorries or by reviving disused wells and setting up mobile water treatment units, local media reported on Monday. Germany's Red Cross has transported two 7,000-litre and four 3,800-litre tanks of drinking water into the region. The Koblenz-based energy provider EVM said it was still in the process of establishing exactly how many households in Ahrweiler district were without gas, which is used to heat water and homes in the region, but that the damage to its supply system was dramatic.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
June 28, 2021, on the occasion of the National Judiciary Week and the martyrdom anniversary of Ayatollah Martyr Beheshti and other personalities. We should not follow the lead of the United States in politics and in elections. We should not learn from Trump and Biden who insulted each other in their debates. These are not good examples and they should not be looked at. America's disastrous elections. In the eyes of the whole world, the election held by the enemies of Iran, the United States, was a scandalous election. They really did an awful job. Now the same scoundrels are criticizing our election. An American element commented on the Iranian election. Despite the scandal on their own plates, they have found their tongues after several months and speak against our elections. However, with the scandal that they crafted, they should not say a single word about any elections. Expression of support for the president-elect by officials and other candidates. One point that one should thank God for is that after the election and the victory of the president-elect with a high percentage, the attitude of the country's official was a good one. This is a sign of the necessary peace and tranquility in the country. It is a very good thing for the high-ranking officials of the country to come and meet with the elected president to talk and to exchange views. It is a good thing that the candidates who did not win congratulated the candidate who did and expressed their interest and support for him. This is another divine blessing. We hope that God the Exalted will help us see more of these examples. Compare this to the behavior of the Americans and see how one treated the other after he won. You surely remember his words and statements then. Notice in what situation they were a few months ago. I hope that God the Exalted will bless the results of the elections. I hope that he will bless Mr. Raisi's new responsibility, both for himself and for the Iranian nation and the country. I hope that God the Exalted will bring the people's movement to fruition by showering blessings on them. I hope that he will help Mr. Raisi and other officials carry out the important tasks that fall on him with the assistance of the people. Greetings be upon you. And God's mercy and blessings.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.